Blog Talk Radio.
Tell everybody, this is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson. It is November 30th, Friday, the end of November, 25 days before Christmas. Have you decided what you want for Christmas? Have you decided what you want for Christmas? Let's see what we want for Christmas. I have no idea what I want. I know what I want for Christmas. I definitely know what I want for Christmas. And what I want for Christmas is to have these people, Barack Obama, in the White House, looking out over a snow-covered lawn with the Christmas tree saying, you know what? It doesn't get any better than this. And it doesn't. We have a president who has now gotten his second term in office, and all the weasels on the entire planet could not prevent him from getting there. All the weasels on this entire planet could not prevent him from getting there. And it's really a shame because, whoops, that was me. It's because these people have no idea what they're doing. These people are so ungrateful. They are just ungrateful. You know, and I think that that goes for, by the way, I'm going to be doing a solo performance today, but I have to play something that I just love.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come. Come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain a cup dry. Wait till your charms are right for these arms to surround. You think you've flown before, but you ain't left the ground. Here, the best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Oh, out of a tree of life, I just picked me a plum.
Okay, we had a slight problem. Let me give Tony one more chance here, okay? All right, Tony, I'm sorry.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started to hum. Well, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come.
The best is yet to come, they won't it be fine. Yes, sir, the best is yet to come. And this is what the regressive party was afraid of. They have now been beaten by a community organizer, not once on a fluke, but twice. You know, what's that thing about that old Bushy said? Fool me once, fool me twice, shame on me. Well, it's not really like that.
because they're still counting votes out in California. They're still counting votes in California. It's about 4 million now that he's beaten the Mister by. And when they finish out in California, it could be up to 6 million votes and 332 electoral votes. The only president besides FDR and Ronald Reagan that got, matter of fact, I'm sorry, the only president besides FDR to get two. I guess it was Ronald Reagan did do it in his both times. 50% or more twice. Twice. I mean, come on, give me some bread. Can you please give this man some cred? Either he is the number one community organizer and number one pitchman for the United States of America next to FDR that ever lived, or the Regressive Party is the worst organization walking on the face of the earth. Now, tell me, are they? Are they the worst organization walking on the face of the earth? Tell me one single thing that Mr. K. Rove accomplished for $400 million. I know people that would cut your throat for 50 cents. What the heck do you think they would do for $400 million? And you got nothing. You didn't get one thing passed. You have a daggone, I don't know, don't even know their names in the Congress. And next Congress is going to be worse for them because there were more Democrats elected. And if they didn't win in 2010, there would be zero in the House Republicans. They would be so far down the rabbit hole, they would not know. They have to keep digging so they could come out on the other end of the earth, on the other side of the earth. This regressive party, and this is what burns me up about it. Everybody says, oh, that's great. Let them go down the rabbit hole. No, I do not want to see them go down the rabbit hole. This regressive party has to stop being so aggressive and stop being more progressive so they can compete with the Democratic Party. I am a liberal Democrat, and I am saying that. They need to compete with the Democratic Party. What don't you understand? Because if we have one party rule, we have chaos. We have nothing. We have a dictatorship. We need two-party rule. That's what makes this government function. And this now has been voted the worst. Not even vote. Don't even help me. How many want to say, yeah, their words are bad? No, just by the amount of bills. They have passed less legislation than any Congress in the history of these United States. And it was by design. Because the first day that this president, Barack Obama, was elected to office, McConnell went behind closed doors with his ilk and said, we must prevent this man from ever becoming, if they said the word man, we must prevent him from ever getting reelected. So what did they do? They said no to everything that he proposed. But you know what they did, though, besides that? They said no to everything that they proposed, things that they proposed in the past, like infrastructure. They said no because they could not, they did not want him to have a win on any, because, hey, it doesn't matter what happens, what bills are passed, the president has to sign it. They might pass it, but the president has to sign it. Therefore, his name is with it. They could not afford to have this man get anything passed. And the simple, simple, simple reason is because he's a black man. And if you people listening to me, everybody listening to me, cannot understand that by now, then you're living in a dream world. You're just living in a dream world. They are going to prevent this man forever, forever getting any legislation passed. And how they did that was by preventing him from getting reelected. And it's really a shame. It really is a shame. I don't know what's going on with the, that's twice we were dropped from Skype. So I don't know. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. But we're back up. As I was saying, we need to, let's see what's up here. Okay. We are looking at the TV screen. I have it on all the time on the show in case anything pops up. Then I can let everybody know what's going on. Now, before I get too far afield, let me tell you about some of the things that we're going to talk about today. Whatever happened to the $12 billion in cash that was sent to Iraq during the war over there? Whatever happened to the $12 billion in cash that was sent over to Iraq by the plane loads, wrapped, crisp, new bills? Whatever happened to them, that money? We're also going to be talking about my segment called Preacher Features. Nut job preachers like Pat Robinson and his ilk, who said they heard from God personally. Mitt Romney was going to win. Whatever happened to Paul Eddie Munster Ryan? I guess he is supposed to be seen but not heard, but he's not even seen. And we'll be talking about this this buffoon, Stuart Stevens, who is the campaign chair for Mitt Romney, who said that, you know, we got everything we wanted. We just didn't get across the finish line. I tell you, these guys spin and spin. It's just unbelievable. Let me tell you, in case you didn't hear, here's what happened.
Tonight, in this election, you, the American people, reminded us that while our road has been hard, while our journey has been long, we have picked ourselves up. We have fought our way back. And we know in our hearts that for the United States of America, the best is yet to come.
That's right. That's what we know. We know in our hearts the best is yet to come. That's what happened, Stuart Buffoon Stevenson. That's what happened. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening. And, you know, there's other buffoon, and this, well, let me remind you what he said, Mitch McConnell, in January of 2009.
our top political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term.
I guess that was their top political priority. I guess they didn't include winning the next election. They denied him, but yet the committee organized, got his people together and won another election. I mean, how is that possible? As Alaska Palin said, community organizer? Yes, community organizer. That's who he is, a community organizer. And if you don't organize the community, how do you expect to win? I just don't understand that. Is that something that's it must be a figment of our imagination. Yes. And then we have Mr. Boehner. Mr. Boehner, who finds himself in the same position as he was in 2009. The same position. And what do you do when you find yourself in the same position that you were the last time you lost? And now you're facing someone who doesn't have to run again and doesn't have to put up with your bull. Remember what Frank
said. Let me warn you, and let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things, but we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything.
Every time I hear that. Every time you hear Boehner or McConnell, well, because those are the only people you hear from now. You don't hear from Eddie Munster, Ryan anymore. You don't hear from the other clowns. Just think of that, what we just said. Give it to them. They can do it better. They can do it a whole lot quicker. That's the reason why the president ain't listening to them, because they couldn't do it. They don't even know where they're at. It's a major problem that they are now seeing. And we're going to get into that, but I just want to at this point, talk about one of my favorite all-time shows. Choir, that is one of my favorite all-time shows. And Larry Hagman has passed. Dallas, remember when it first came on, 1978, I religiously watched that show with my wife and family members. If we weren't home, it was definitely taped. And you see, it was a major thing because my cousin, my first cousin, Marilyn, and her husband, George, after Dallas was over, we got on the phone. And we talked about what JR did. Oh, and who he did it to. And how he always got the last laugh. And he was the villain to really hate. But you know what? I don't know if you could actually hate him that much. Because Larry Hagman was such a, you got a glee out of what JR did. It was just a glee. It was a major glee what JR did. And you always just said, you know, this guy is so great. There's just no way I could ever do anything that would ever have me not want to watch this show. He is such a devil. And you said to yourself every time, oh, man, that JR is doing this. And what really got to be good was how he treated Cliff Barnes. I want to tell you, Cliff Barnes. Now, if anybody deserved anything, it was Cliff Barnes. He deserved everything he got because it was just like, you know, watching someone. It was just like watching someone who was looking to get beat down. His whole thing was he hated JR so much he could never beat JR, and JR always reminded him about his daddy Digger Barnes, and Jock Ewing. That's how this whole thing started, because you see, Digger Barnes was Cliff Barnes' father, and he went into the oil business. They started the oil business together. And Digger Barnes also liked Miss Ellie, who was JR's father. But the thing was that Jock took Miss Ellie away from Digger, got South Fork in a card game, and Digger lost everything. JR, the last thing on his wish list was to rub it in the nose of Cliff Barnes. And he did it every single time he could. It was just amazing. I just loved that show. And Larry Hagman has always been a major, major player on the stage. In show business, his mother was Mary Martin. She played Peter Pan on Broadway. She was the first Peter Pan. So he grew up in the business, and then, of course, my I.G. McGinney. And a lot of people won't remember, but he was the interpreter in the great film with Henry Fonda called Failsafe. And he was the Russian interpreter that Henry Fonda took down in the basement when he spoke to the Kremlin. To fear because there was a nuclear B-58 Husker bombers were on the way to drop nuclear weapons in Russia, if you don't know the story. But it's a film that you need to go to Blockbuster and get. It's black and white, but it's better black and white because it's very stark. You have to see this film. But that was another film that Larry Hagman was in, and which he was great in that film also. But Dallas, I just loved that show. And then, you know, right after that, Dallas was Falcon Crest that came off of that, and then, of course, there was Dynasty. But they were the two best, the three best shows on television during that time here, during that time that we watched. All right, let's get into some business here. I just had to talk about Larry Hagman for a few minutes. Where did that $12 billion go in cash that went to Iraq? I mean, these banknotes disappeared into the war zone now. The U.S. flew nearly $12 billion in shrink-wrapped $100 bills into Iraq. Now, you need to get the Guardian, the February 7th edition. They did this was in 2007. They did a major article on this. And in this, David Polista talks about how this money was then distributed with no controls. They didn't even know who received it or how it was spent. And this is just a staggering amount of money. This is 2003 now. So how come Secretary of State didn't know about this? How come National Security Advisor didn't know about this? How come they haven't been questioned about it? You're talking about Susan Rice. This is 2003, after he got into the war. And you got to remember that Condoleezza Rice was the Secretary of State then. And she lied her butt off on television. And who else lied about that? Let me see. I think it was Lindsey Graham and John McCain. And we'll have them in a little bit. But this was over 363 tons. That's how much money it was. They used C-130 cargo planes to deliver it twice a month, with the biggest delivery, $2,401,600,000. And that was done June 22nd, 2004. 6 days, ladies and gentlemen, before we handed it over to the Iraqis. Now, is there something that seems amiss here? And these details that came emerged from a meeting in the House Committee, Oversight Committee for the Government Reform, in examining the Iraqi reconstruction. And Henry Waxman, a Democrat, who was a fierce critic of the war, he said the way this cash was handled, it's just mind-boggling. The numbers are so large, it doesn't seem possible that they're true. But they are. 363 tons of cash into a war zone with no signed receipts, no nothing. We don't know who got it. We don't know who received it. We don't know where it went. It was just handed over to the coalition. And do you know who's in charge of that? You saw that crew-cut, glasses-wearing foreign policy advisor for Mitt Romney? Duh, he was in charge of it. It was supposed to be for food and famine. $12 billion? I mean, this is just incredible. They also found that $744,300 in cash had been stolen from one division's vault. One contractor, this is a division of the contractors that were there because it was given to them, he said one of the contractors received $2 million in payments in a duffel bag. Shrink wrap money. And it was kept? It was kept in the vault. This is what the contractor is saying. It was kept in a vault, but nobody was guarding the vault, and the key was right on the door of the vault. Let me see. Does that work? Yeah, that works. Another official said was given $6.75 million in cash and was ordered to spend it in 1 week before the interim Iraqi government took control of the Iraqi funds. Oh, so now it's even saying that Iraqis didn't even get this money. It went to the contractors, maybe. Most likely. Absolutely. She. That's the name of the contractors. But the old name, which escapes me now, but it will come back. But she is the name that they're using now. Blackwater was the name of the group. They changed the name 3 times because they were under indictment here in this country. That's why they moved out of the country, I think, to Dubai. Let's see here. What else? In May 2004, the CPA meeting revealed a single disbursement of $500 million in securities labeled merely to be decided. Many of the funds seem to have been lost to ghost employees who were receiving checks from the Iraqi ministries under the CPA control. According to Stuart Bowman, the special inspector general for the Iraqi reconstruction, $8.8 billion funds to the Iraqi ministries were distributed without assurance that the monies would properly be used or accounted for. But according to the memorandum, he now believes that the lack of accountability and transparency extended to the entire $20 billion expended by the CPA. I mean, can this get any worse? The head of the CPA was the first person who was in charge in Iraq before we created a government, and that was Paul Bremer. And he reminded the committee that subject to today's hearing, the CPA's use and accounting for funds belonging to the Iraqi people held in the so-called development fund area for Iraq. These are not appropriate American funds. No, they weren't. See, they're trying to say that they were funds that were frozen that Saddam Hussein had. So they weren't any monies that we had, although they were in our banks. So I believe these were Iraqi funds. I believe the CPA discharged its responsibility to manage these Iraqi funds on behalf of the Iraqi people. Yeah, give us a freaking break. Bremer's financial advisor, retired Admiral David Oliver, is even more direct. The memorandum quotes an interview with the BBC World Service. Asked what had happened to the $8.8 billion, he replied, "I have no idea." Thank you. Okay, I'm back on. Okay. Now, this is what the story is. What happened to the billions of dollars that were dispersed without a trace? Paul Bremer, who was in charge when he was disbanding the Iraqi armed forces, he said he had blamed it on the contributions to the chaos. He told the committee, "I acknowledge that I made mistakes and that with the benefit of hindsight, I would have made some decisions differently. Our top priority was to get the money moving again. The first step was to get money into the hands of the Iraqi people as quickly as possible. Millions of civil service families had not received salaries or pensions for months, and there was no effective banking system. It was not a perfect solution," he said. "Delay, well, might have been exasperated. He said, through the insurgency and thereby increased the danger for all Americans." So what they're saying is, well, through the eyes of war, things like this happen. Through the eyes of war, things like this happen. I mean, can you believe it? These people had the nerve to say that this is something that happens during war. Millions and millions and millions of dollars just disappear. it gets to be a problem when people can just lie to your face. They just lie to your face. We have been lied to since 2003. We have been lied to, constantly lied to. And no one seems to care except us liberals and progressives. The Progressive Party has gone so far down the tubes. The Progressive Party has been lied to by their people in charge for so long. They have been brainwashed by the conservative media blitzkrieg that has encompassed the conservative portion of the Republican Party for nearly 30 years now. And the problem is, how long can they hold on fooling the people? How long? It's not only just lying politically, but they're using God to lie. Let me just play something here for you, and I can show you why I'm saying this. Part of our preacher features. And this is from the constantly, forever lying mouth of Pat Robertson.
Talk a little bit about where you see things going, what God spoke to you.
I spent the better part of a week in prayer and just saying, God, show me something, and I'll share with you some things. I'll share with you, and I think he showed me about the next president, but I'm not supposed to talk about that, so I'll leave you in the dark.
Probably just as well,
but I think I know who it's going to be. All right, I'm going to read just what I wrote down, and I'm, as if I'm hearing from the Lord these words. Your country will be torn apart by internal stress. A house divided cannot stand. Your president holds a radical view of the direction of your country, which is at odds with the majority. Expect chaos and paralysis. Your president holds a view which is at the odds with the majority. It's a radical view of the future of the country, and so that's why we're having this division. This is a spiritual battle which can only be won by overwhelming prayer. The future of the world is at stake because if America falls, there's no longer a strong champion of freedom and a champion of the oppressed of the world. There must be an urgent call to prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the Lord said, a time of maximum stress and peril, greater than at any time since the CBN ministry began. This country will begin disintegrating. Now, I thought, when did we start this place? I started CBN in, I think, 1960.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you think of all the things that went on. You had the assassination of the president, the assassination of Martin Luther King. You've got a war in Vietnam. You've got all these things. He said it's a worse stress than before. So I'm saying, God, let me give you some suggestions, and you tell me if any of them is right. You know, pick one. So I said, is it an EMP blast? No, that isn't it. Is it a cosmic or solar radiation blast? No. Is it the Mayan galaxy alignment? No, it's not that.
Which will shock many.
Is it Iranian or North Korean nuclear threat? No. Is it an earthquake or a volcano? No. Is it a massive power failure? No. What is it? It's an economic collapse. And God said, and I quote, this is not my judgment. They are bringing it upon themselves.
This is what this moron said just before the election. He spoke to God himself.
He spoke to God himself. Now, you know, I'm glad he has that rapport with the man above. I'm glad he's looking out and he's going to be our communicator, our operator to the great heaven above. But let's hear what this moron said right after the election.
You have to practice the presence of God, practice the voice of God, practice hearing from God, and then check to see if indeed you are hearing from him. And so many of us miss God. I tell you, I won't get into great detail about elections, but I sure did miss it, and I thought I'd heard from God. I thought I had heard clearly from God. What happened? What intervenes? Why? Well, you ask God, how did I miss it? Well, we all do, and I've had a lot of practice.
He had a lot of practice talking to God. He said so himself. I've had a lot of practice talking to God. I won't get into the details of the election, but I sure missed it. I thought I heard from God. I thought I heard God clearly. You ask God, how did I miss it?
We all do, and I've had a lot of practice.
Says he. Because he's a liar. And the people who are out there trying their darndest to hear from God fall for the same crap over and over and over again, because this man says he spoke to God. You believe him? I mean, how much longer can this guy be on the radio and on TV and in your life when he is a liar and he's a known liar? The next time this moron tells you he spoke with God and received special messages, you may want to remind yourself about this incident where he says he spoke directly to God. Now, Bill Riley, Hannity, Krautheimer, they all say the same thing. But they're not using God as their excuse. They're using it because they're racist. Now, whether or not Pat Robertson is racist or not, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's using God to get over on poor, ignorant people who have nothing and nobody else to follow. They want to follow somebody. 95% of the people on this planet are followers. They're not leaders. 95%. And they're looking for anything that will help them get by the next day. And all I can say is, you're talking about being dependent. Barack Obama is making you dependent. What do you think the 700 Club is doing? You're dependent on Pat Robertson whether you should get up on the right side or the left side of the bed every single day. You don't know whether or not you should put your affairs in order because, the Indians say that it's going to be the end of the world, December 21st. I mean, come on, ladies and gentlemen. As what's the old crotchety guy from the Christmas Carol?
God bless them one and all, because you certainly need it. Now, there is a it's time. I have to play it because we, as I said before, we haven't heard from him. So let me just give a little hint. I like to do that. Relegated to the shit pile. That's all it is. Where have you been? Where have you gone? Eddie Munster, Paul, Eddie Munster, Ryan, where have you been? You're hiding out of the limelight. You know, of course, there has never been a president. A vice president, should say, not a president, a vice president, someone who's run for vice president, that has ever lost and run for the presidency and ever won. It don't happen. Sorry. So we can forget about the Munster man. He didn't even win Wisconsin. A lot of good that did. A lot of good that did him. I mean, for you millionaires out there, you just need to remember one thing from your great leader of all time. Just need to remember one thing from your great leader of all time, Mr. Ronald Reagan. Here's what he said to you guys.
And that's why this plan eliminates tax loopholes that primarily go to the wealthiest taxpayers and biggest corporations.
We're going to close the unproductive tax loopholes that have allowed some of the truly wealthy to avoid paying their fair share. In theory, some of those loopholes were understandable, but in practice, they sometimes made it possible for millionaires to pay nothing, while a bus driver was paying 10% of his salary, and that's crazy.
Middle class families.
So, just remember that. Even Ronald Reagan said, that's crazy! Why are you millionaires paying less money than a bus driver or a secretary? You think John Boehner's in trouble? Yes, he's in trouble because he's got the same buffoons in Congress on the with the Progressive Party, Tea Party, Tea Bag Party that's going to front him. Now, he came out, Mr. Boehner, came out yesterday and talked about the fiscal cliff. He said, nothing. We have heard nothing from the president. The president has not done anything to help this country. Well, let me play a little bit for you.
Despite the claims that the president supports a balanced approach, the Democrats have yet to get serious about real spending cuts. And secondly, no substantive progress has been made in the talks between the White House and the House over the last 2 weeks. The Majority Leader and I just had a meeting with the Treasury Secretary. It was frank and it was direct. I was hopeful we'd see a specific plan for cutting spending.
The Treasury...
We know what the menu is. What we don't know is what the White House is willing to do to get serious about solving our debt crisis.
So what is...
Now, come on. He just outright lied. Boehner outright lied. He met with the... talked to the president for 28 minutes on the phone the night before he met with Geithner. Exactly. He knew exactly what was going on. But you see, he's got to talk in those quiet rooms with the president because the other morons in the Progressive Party do not want him saying anything. They want the country to fold. They still think that they can work on the same do-nothing basis and bring down the president. But you know what? He ain't running again, so he don't have to fall for that okey-doke. Now, he said there were no new proposals. Well, that's a bunch of crap. Let me tell you what the proposals are. And these are 10-year figures. The president and Geithner told Boehner, this is our proposal. Now you come back with your proposal. This is what compromise is. This is what it's all about. You know, if you're not going to compromise, then you don't need two parties. The president's compromise for a 10-year figure was $1.6 trillion in tax increases on the rich. Now, a lot of this is going to be made when the Bush-era tax cuts go kaput December 31st. They will reset back to, gee whiz, 39%, when these rich people made more money than their entire, during their entire actual careers. Made more money was made, and if I can find this here, more money was made during this, during the 1990s than ever. Do you know that the number of billionaires in the United States has increased so much that it is just outrageous? And I thought I had that figure here, but I'm looking and I don't think I do have it. But the billionaires, I had one figure here. Let's see if I can dig it up here. The billionaires have increased so much that it's more than just a little increase. I believe that in 1990 there was like 400. Here's the chart right here. Just checking. That's the same chart I have. Anyway, let's see. Since 2009, let's put it this way. Under the present administration, 2009, from 1987 to 2012, or I should say, since 2009, let's do 2009. 120 million dollars was the first quarter. It went up, let's see, in 2011, third quarter, it went about $260 million. This is in gross quarterly revenue, U.S. dollars. But I'm looking for that, and I don't think I have it. I thought I had the figure here. Evidently, I don't have it. I will try to find that for you and go over it. But to go back to all the things that was offered to Boehner, as I said, $1.6 trillion in tax increases on the rich. That will take in consideration the closing of the Bush-era tax cuts. The second thing the president offered was $400 billion in cuts to Medicare and other entitlements. Whoa, let's get off that now. We're talking about they're going to cut Medicare. No, he's not cutting services to Medicare. There is so much redundancy, so much other stuff that can be cut out on the supply side from the vendors, from the insurance companies. Is that much pork in Medicare? But it would affect no services
whatsoever. It will not affect any services. So, the next thing is, which I think is the engine that's really going to make this country move, the president would like to have $50 billion in stimulus spending on infrastructure, mortgage relief, and other stimulus spending. This worked when the president came in to office. He said, we need a stimulus package. The Republicans rejected it left and right. I guess they have very short memories, because that was one of the major things that was passed under the Bush administration. And Bush's last quarter provided stimulus. He's the one that started it. There was no rejections then. They didn't reject that. They loved it. So what they're saying here is that the Bush era stimulus spending didn't count. No, just didn't count. And you see, the president also wants to extend the payroll tax breaks and unemployment insurance. Now, this is where they can start bargaining. The payroll tax breaks are going to help with what you spend. It will help the employers. The unemployment insurance will also help the people that who don't have a job, who are laid off. But the payroll tax break, this will help Social Security. And one of the main big fights I think they're going to have, what he offers, what he said he wants, is to get the debt ceiling raised. But he wants to have them send him a bill that rejecting that he will reject, and then he will say that he wants the Congress to butt out of approving the debt ceiling, where it's a presidential decision and not a congressional decision. Because we can't have this debt ceiling. No debt ceiling has ever been fought so hard since this black man came in office. And it's only because that would be another thing for him to make the economy grow faster. And you know what? This little community organizer from Chicago got the debt ceiling passed anyway. He also won re-election, and he has the market back and over where it was before he came into office. Matter of fact, I shouldn't even say that. Back to where it was when Clinton was in office, because it turned to shit in a heartbeat when Bush came into office. It went down to 6,000, now up 13,000. So I guess the community organizer does know a little bit something about the economy. A little bit something about the economy. Maybe not as much as a lot of people say, as Mr. 47% says, but he knows a little bit something about the economy. And we're going to talk about Mr. 47% in a minute here, but I just want you to know that when Boehner tells you that the president didn't offer anything to him, he's lying through his teeth. Now, these people still haven't understood that they lost the election. They still have not understood that they have lost the election. And I was going to, as I said before, Stuart Stevens, the buffoon who was the campaign manager for Mitt Romney, he said the other day, oh, Mitt Romney is a good man, and we fought the right fight. He said, we practically won. He said, he won a majority of the voters who make more than $50,000 a year. That means he carried the majority of middle-class voters. No. The average person in this country makes $40,000. $50,000 is just a little bit above the average. So anybody above that is not the average person in this country. And he did not carry that. The median household income in the U.S. is $50,000. The median personal income is around $40,000. So most Americans did not vote for Mitt Romney. If they did, why are they losing? They're 4 million and counting, and when they get through counting every vote in California, it's probably going to be over 6 million. I'm sure a lot of people that make $25,000 to $50,000 consider themselves middle class. So what is this Mr. 47% campaign manager talking about? He also said that John McCain lost young white voters to Obama in 2008. Romney won them by 7 points in some polls. In some polls. Whose polls? His polls. And wow, he lost African-Americans, Latinos, and Asians by 40 to 90% of points. I mean, said he also said Obama got less of the white vote and even lost some of the white youth that he captured in 2008. What don't he understand about this? The majority of the people in this country who are white are becoming a shrinking minority. He said. He also said that in the debates, he had sweeping rallies across the state. Mitt Romney captured the imaginations of millions of Americans. He spoke for those who felt disconnected from Obama's vision of America. He handled the unequal pressures of a campaign with a natural grace and good humor that contrasted sharply with the angry bitterness of his critics. And then he said, you know, you could, you know, just brush off, just dust it off, some dirt on your shoulder, all that. But when he said that Obama beat Romney only because he's black. he said, there was a time so long ago when problems of the Democratic Party revolved around being too liberal and too dependent on minorities. Obama turned those problems into advantages and rode that strategy to victory. But he was a charismatic African-American president with $1 billion, no primary, and no media that often felt mortally conflicted about being critical. How easy is that to replicate? Those minorities are about to be the majority. And if these people don't understand that, there'll be another black charismatic person coming down the pike who will do the same thing. These people need to understand that they are the ones that are now in the minority. And there are a few people in the conservative movement who are not just mouthpieces for the conservative movement. They see their dilemma. They're not Rush Limbaughs or Hannitys or O'Reillys who are now going so far off the deep end because they were proven to be ignorant of the facts, morally corrupt, and just lied to the people in their listening audience because they know they can lie to you. Now, there are conservative political people who want to say
Earth to Republicans, Earth to Republicans. Wake up. Here's a few.
We cannot be cowed by them. We have to, when they say things that are culturally insensitive and stupid, we need to go after them and say, this is not right. We got to stand up. We need some real leadership within the party to say, you know, you are alienating voters that we want to attract. Knock it off.
We've got to get a kind of a party view of America that's not right out of Rush Limbaugh's Dream Journal.
Who is and who is not conservative should not be defined around who agrees with whatever outrageousness comes out of the mouth of these talk radio hosts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Enough is enough.
Right.
The conservative followership has been fleeced, exploited, and lied to by the conservative entertainment complex.
Nick? And that is absolutely true. Because don't forget, here's what else they have been feeding you for 30 years.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And here's another inference how they have been lying to you for years. This is Lee Atwater.
You start out in 1954 by saying... By 1968, you can't say that hurts your backfire, so you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. If it is getting that abstract and that coded, that we're doing away with the racial problem one way or the other, you follow me? Because obviously sitting around saying we want to cut taxes, we want to cut this, and we want is much more abstract than even the busing thing, and a hell of a lot more abstract than...
Now, all those beeps that you heard was where they used the N-word. He says, we can't do that anymore. This was 30 years ago. We can't use the N-word anymore. We have to be a little more subtle in what we're saying to the public, because they will start to catch on. This is what they think. Remember.
Our top political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term.
And this is how they've gone on and gone on and gone on for years. They have lied to the American public. They have used every trick in the book by saying, we want stuff, we're lazy, we don't want to work, and they're talking about African Americans. They never said that about the Latins yet, but hey, Latins are just coming on, so their chance will be coming up the horizon. There are people out there that really believe this because they want to blame somebody for the mess that they are in. The only person they get blamed for this mess is themselves for listening to one side of the story. When you listen to one side of the story, you have a one-sided thinking process. And now, all you hear is these pundits and Rush Limbaugh saying this.
We've suffered a setback, folks, but we have not given up on our principles. And that's important. Nobody is giving up, but we are facing reality here. We are either outnumbered and are losing ground, or one of the most outrageous thefts of an election in the history of elections taking place.
So, hey, they won. It was by accident the first time. Obama won by an accident. Because there's no way he should win. There's just no way. He could not win because he's a community organizer. But he won.
he beat the pig on a lipstick person. He beat the senile old crotchety man. But that wasn't going to be this time. That wasn't going to be this time because Karl Rove had to fix him. And we will get to that in just a few minutes. But Karl had to fix him. So they did not expect to win. I mean, the mister didn't even write a concession speech. What does that tell you? Didn't write a concession speech. Karl Rove goes on the air and has a complete meltdown on his own network, Fox, because they weren't in on the trick. Because what Karl Rove did was treasonous. We're going to get to that. But these are some of the things that these people said. And as we said before, let's listen to Rush again.
We've suffered a setback, folks, but we have not given up on our principles. And that's important. Nobody...
They haven't given up on their principles. The problem is, they don't have any principles. They don't have any principles. And that's the problem. And that's what Obama saw in his first debate with Mitt Romney. He lied through his teeth. Lied. He, every time he got in front of the audience, he changed his spots like a daggone chameleon. He was one way. He went for a year, 2 years, saying one thing. And then when he got to say something else, he changed his mind. When you caught him on it, he changed his mind again. You know, it's not that they don't think about whether or not people have videotape. And if people, you can play this back and listen to it. It's not that they don't, people, you don't, they know that people don't have DVRs, that they can play it back and listen to it. It's not as though they don't know this 24-hour news cycle, and after the first 12 hours of the same news being hashed over and over again, they won't see it. It's just that when you listen to Fox News, you don't get that information over and over again. You don't get it in the first place. All you hear is a one-size-fits-all. The people who listened to Fox were so shocked that Mitster lost, they still can't comprehend it. The mister was involved. He was in over his eye, up to his eyeballs in it. He knew he was going to win because he was told by the Rove machine and the billions of dollars that was spent. Billions. You know, it was billions of dollars that was spent. That this was in the bag. That's why there was no need to have a concession speech written. There was no need for a concession speech written.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
Yes, the shadow. In fact, we'll play that a little later, but because we're going to get to what is going on.
But let's talk about Mr. 47%. Mr. 47%.
Yes, Mr. 47%. I'm telling you, Romney is such a moo-moo. This guy,
It doesn't even make any sense. This doesn't even make any sense that he would go along, would have a speech, and, you know, well, he's so used to having his own way. He wanted to run the organization his own way because this is what he has done his entire life. He has run organizations. He's never had to answer to anyone at all. Never had to answer to anyone at all. He has never had to worry about whether or not someone is going to challenge him, because he's always been the person in charge. Always. And, you know, whatever he said, hey, that's the bottom line. As the CEO, as the president of the company, when you say something, you are expected the next day or the day after, whatever deadline you gave them, that it would be done without any conversation when he asked you, hey, jump. How high? You don't ask how high. You just jump. Now, we heard about Romney talking about Obama. And let's play a little bit about Obama here. This is what Romney said.
What the president's campaign did was focus on certain members of his base coalition, give them extraordinary financial gifts from the government, and then work very aggressively to turn them out to vote.
The giving away free stuff is a hard thing to compete with.
So giving away free stuff is a hard thing to contend with, right? I mean, here's some other things that is hard to contend with.
What the president did is he gave them two things. One, he gave them a big gift on immigration with the DREAM Act amnesty program. Number two, put in place Obamacare, which basically is $10,000 a family. I mean, it's a proven political strategy, which is give a bunch of money from the government to a group, and guess what? They'll vote for you.
What the president's campaign did was focus on certain members of his base coalition, give them extraordinary financial gifts from the government, and then work very aggressively to turn them out to vote.
So, I think that's how you're supposed to win elections. He didn't give them anything personally in their hands. If I come to think of it, wasn't Romney going to give the 1% to 2% of the upper billionaires or millionaires class another tax break for Christmas? Wasn't he doing that? Or that doesn't count because these are the job creators. Well, if he thinks that they were the job creators, why wasn't any jobs created during the Bush administration when they were losing upwards of 750 to 800,000 jobs a month? Obama wasn't president. This was under a Bush administration. This was on a Bush House. Why were they losing all this money? Makes no common sense. But you see, again, when you only hear one side of the story and you constantly hear that same side, this is what you're relegated to. This is what you are relegated to. Now, Election Day was over 3 weeks ago, and as I said, the popular vote total is still coming in. And it's very ironic. The words 47% have now been defined as Mitt Romney. You know, like one plus one equals two. You learned that in first grade? Well, 47% equals Mitt Romney. Because that's what he lost. That's what he got. He got 47% of the vote. So isn't that sort of ironic that he said he didn't need the 47%? That's what he got. He evidently needed that 47%, because if he didn't get that 47%, he would have had 0%, and would have got zero, he would have lost 100% to nothing. According to the detailed tally of the Cook's Political Report, President Obama, at this present time, had 64,811,843 votes. To Romney, 60,444,303, or 50.9% to Romney's 47.5%. Rounded to the nearest whole number, it's 51 to 47. Now, it might be a little less than that when the California figures come in, but you know that when they saw that he only got 47%, the Romney conglomerate were just shocked. And when all comes in, Romney is going to get closer. He might get even very close to the borderline of 46.9. Some other tidbits. So Obama's popular vote margin is 3.4 now, but it should be rising. But of all the talk about the razor thin, the speculation this could be the tightest national election of any and ever, Obama's 2012 victory isn't even in the top 10 of the closest elections in history. So it wasn't as razor thin. And I was telling people that I did not think this was going to be a close election. I was telling people this for months. Matter of fact, for over a year, when I saw the buffoon clown show that was up on the stage. Did anybody think that any one of those people were actually presidential, or was it all about getting the black guy out of the White House? I mean, a pizza man who didn't even know the answer to any foreign policy questions. The only answer he knew was 999. Then you get the moron who they call America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani. And as President Biden says, the only three words he knows is a noun, a verb, and 9/11. Then you have, I won't even get to her. Well, we'll talk about her. Backman. She won the straw vote in Iowa. I mean, can you actually believe that people who don't have any foreign policy experience, who don't have any experience whatsoever, look at the bill she has passed. You'll see she has not passed or co-signed on any bills. What are these people doing there in the Congress? They're supposed to be working for you. You hired them to work for you. You did not hire them to be in the mud and be a stick in the mud to prevent legislation from going through. This is the worst Congress in history. They have only passed, I think, 130-something votes. It's just It's just outrageous. They are completely a, well, I don't want to say it's not groundbreaking. It's just that they have broken the mold of what a Congress should not do. They have had more filibusters than all the Congresses in this century. How about that? Over 380 filibusters. That means every single thing that they put through, that the president wanted, they have said no. Nothing they have said. They've said yes to a couple of things, like the naming of post offices, the naming of airports, things like that. And that was the problem for Democrat Larry Kissel. He wasn't with the president on hardly anything either. None of the big projects, but he was with him when he was naming a lot of post offices. I'm talking about Larry Kissel from North Carolina. That's the reason why the Black Leadership Caucus did not campaign for him, which led to his downfall. And now the Regressive Party is after Chris Christie. I'm no fan of Chris Christie's, but Chris Christie knew where his bread was buttered, what side it was buttered on. And he knew the Regressive Party wasn't going to help him when Sandy came up. He knew he had to go to the only person that could help him, and his state of New Jersey was Mr. Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. Where are these other moo-moos? Rince Priebus, the head of the Republican Party, who got there because they wanted to get rid of the black guy that was there, Michael Steele. And I'm not no favorite of Michael Steele, but Michael Steele sort of spoke truth to power when he was there, and they could not tolerate that anymore. They had to get rid of him. So they put in this guy, Rince Priebus, who's got them sold down the tubes. And do you know this person is going to be put back in that job again? After getting slaughtered this time around? Yes, Michael Steele was in there when Obama beat him the last time, but it wasn't like this. He won 332 electoral votes. The Republican Party has a regional party now. It's now known as the Regressive Party. And their region is the South. And it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. By the year 2020, they will lose Texas. It will be in the hands of the Democratic Party. And once that happens, they will never again hold a national major office, because these teabaggers and these regressive parties, the Norquist with the tax increases holding steady for that, they will not relent until the Regressive Party, the members of the Regressive Party that let this happen, come back and take their party back. They need to do that. They need to take their party back. As I said before, we need to have a two-party system. We cannot have a one-party system. I am not in favor of the Democratic Party being in charge in every state, in every legislature, in every Senate House, in every governorship, and every single in the House and federal and Senate level and the presidency. You can't not have one party rule. It's a detriment, and we would go the same way as this Progressive Party if that happened.
We need to have people in the Progressive Party who are Republicans to step up, get out from under their thumb, because there's more of you. There's more of you. And if you stick together, you can beat these tea baggers. You can beat these Grover Norquists. You can beat them. Hey, but, you know, I'm only a liberal trying to help you Republicans stand up and be Republicans. Now, if you don't want to do that, it makes it more difficult for Democrats, because we will not get what we want, even if we're in charge. Because when you let somebody run amok, which will happen eventually, when you only have one party rule, it will be the detriment to everyone. So we need to remember, it is not how much or how many seats you hold. It is what you're going to do with the time that you're in there in the governorship or in the House or in the Senate seat. You're there because it's a representative republic. This is not a democracy. And one of the things that we need to understand is that in democracy, we have to make compromise. Now, one of the things I also want to talk about is when are these Republicans going to get it? They just don't get it. They have this this guy, Tom Davis, part of the Republican Progressive Party. And it's just unbelievable. Tom Davis was saying the other day about being politically correct. He said that's he made the reference about being politically correct, and he talked about these people making $50,000. He said when Stuart Stevenson boasted about that the President Obama only won the votes of Americans who earned less than $50,000. You know, Davis said diversity problems with supposedly moderate former Congressman Tom, and he is the former Congressman for Virginia. He said the thing is that he called them underclass minorities. He's especially those who orientate themselves towards city life, who were pulled out of their apartments. He said, these are the people. He said, we need to understand that you just can't talk about underclass. Like these people are just something just living in the moment. You know, and it's worse than being politically correct or politically incorrect. Just can't talk about the people the way they talk about people. They have no respect for anybody that doesn't have money. And this is a problem that they are going to finally see that is going to be the final cork in the bottle. And this Davis remark has gotten him a lot of attention. He said, these are groups, Davis went on and said, these groups are traditionally people who haven't voted. And he says, I'm not accusing Democrats of any fraud. He says, but it seems like that it's a fact that the president turned out people who just traditionally haven't voted. Well, why? Why did he turn out these people? Because you guys in the Progressive Party made it so
obvious and so racist that it'd be people who didn't vote before said, you know, I got to do something about this. I can no longer stay on the sidelines. But you just rubbed their face in it. That's what you did. And they just made this racial stereotype, rub their nose in it. And Republicans, they just go ballistic. They don't know what to do when people who don't normally vote turn up and vote. Because when that happens, they just don't lose. They lose by a wider margin. What's the requirements to vote? Being a citizen, being registered. He said, it wasn't until 1830, more than 50 years after our nation's founding, that white men had universal suffrage. I mean, some white men couldn't vote. Remember that? I mean, you had to have money. You had to have land. You had to pay taxes. You had to pass a literacy test, especially African-Americans in the South. He said, if the thing is that if every eligible voter voted in the United States, Republicans wouldn't be in any office. Most of them are working class. Other people who don't vote, a lot of them can't vote because their boss will not give them time off to vote. It's during the week. That needs to be changed. We need to have the vote during the weekend when the majority of people are off. That's one of the changes that needs to be made. And now they want to change that in Florida. We don't have any. You can't register to vote on the same day anymore. They don't want that. They still wanted that after all this time, all saw this backlash. They want to change it still further by preventing people from registering to vote the same time as they vote. They don't want you to register. They want you to come back a second time because they know, they don't know, but they think that might answer their recipe for getting back into government. But it's not, because in 2016, there's going to be more Latinos who are going to be able to vote, and there's going to be less of them. What don't they understand? This is why they're pushing these restrictive voting laws. They think by restricting the vote, as you heard before, they don't want everyone to vote. When they get everybody to vote, they don't win. Just listen.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Because the Progressive Party knows if every eligible voter actually voted, we would live in a very different world than we live today. There would be less economic suffering, a lot more opportunity. There would be people that would not be as many people on welfare. They want to make sure that lower income people voted in the same proportion that upper income people, they do not want lower income people voting in the same proportion as upper income people. Because that would only be the end of the Republican Party. It is not the candidates. Although, I don't know if I can actually say that this time. Because the clown show that was on, that went on the road in 2000 and, I guess, 10, in 2011, the Donald Trumps and the Bachmans and the Pizza Man and the New Gingriches, all these rejects was a clown show. The only one, well, no, there was two that was straight up. And the only one the Democrats even had to worry about was John Huntsman. He was the one that would have given Barack Obama the biggest challenge. Because the mister, he was a one-note pony. The only thing that he could say was, I'm going to have you make money. We're going to make you make money. We're going to have us all make money. He said, now, I'm not telling you how, but you got to elect me first, then I'll tell you how, but we're all going to make money. Well, you know, you got to have a job to make money. And he wasn't saying how he was going to get us all jobs. He said, it's going to happen because, hey, it's always happened with me. I've always had jobs. No, he's never created a job in his life. That's nonsense. That was a figment of his imagination and the wannabe Republican imagination. So the Republicans have to make a major decision here. And as the former John McCain strategist Mike Burkey said, he says that I just disagree with how this party is going. He says, but the problems can be fixed. But the handwriting is on the wall. The Republican challenge is not about a better voting turnout software. It's about policy. We repel Latinos, the fastest growing voter group in the country, with our naivety, our opposition to immigration, and all forms of citizenship. We repel younger voters who are much more secular than our parents with our opposition to same-sex marriage and our scolding tone on social issues. We also have lost much of our once solid connection in the middle-class kitchen table economic issues. But the one thing he didn't say, how are you going to get the African-American vote back? How are you going to get them back? It's just out there. Then Murphy put the word on to say, he said, he's being vilified now by the right. He said, he chided Davis for using the term, calling it dated. It's more than dated. It's ugly. It's divisive. He said, whenever we start talking about the underclass. Underclass is just another way for Republicans blaming the poor for their poverty and place them outside the American family. So we have this whole scenario now that they need to blame everybody. They need to blame everybody who did not for their reason why they didn't win. They need to blame everybody. And the problem is, all they have to do is look in the mirror. That's all they have to do is look in the mirror. Now, before I forget, I want to play something here for you about what's going on with Mr. John McCain. He's a bitter and senile old man.
Four Americans died that didn't have to die. and for someone to go out and convey something that is absolutely false to all America, in my view, that we are, is responsibility. I don't know how you logically assume that she had nothing to do with Benghazi. The American people were told false information by her at the direction of the White House. No. By the way, I'm not taking anybody on. The American people have lost four brave Americans. We owe it to their families. We owe it to other Americans who served to find out what happened. For the President of the United States, for 2 weeks afterwards, to deny that that was the case is either a cover-up or it is incompetence, either one of the two. I think the President of the United States has a lot to answer for.
The President of the United States has a lot to answer for. You know, well, let's hear what the President of the United States answered to Mr. McCain.
Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham both said today that they want to have Watergate-style hearings on the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, and said that if you nominate Susan Rice to be Secretary of State, they will do everything in their power to block her nomination. As Senator Graham said, he simply doesn't trust Ambassador Rice after what she said about Benghazi. I'd like your reaction to that, and would those threats deter you from making a nomination like that?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to comment at this point on various nominations that I'll put forward to fill out my cabinet for the second term. Those are things that are still being discussed. But let me say specifically about Susan Rice. She has done exemplary work. She has represented the United States and our interests in the United Nations with skill and professionalism and toughness and grace. As I've said before, she made an appearance at the request of the White House, in which she gave her best understanding of the intelligence that had been provided to her. If Senator McCain and Senator Graham and others want to go after somebody, they should go after me. And I'm happy to have that discussion with them. But for them to go after the UN ambassador, who had nothing to do with Benghazi, and was simply making a presentation based on intelligence that she had received, and to besmirch her reputation, is outrageous. And, you know, we're after an election now. I think it is important for us to find out exactly what happened in Benghazi, and I'm happy to cooperate in any ways that Congress wants. We have provided every bit of information that we have, and we will continue to provide information, and we've got a full-blown investigation, and all that information will be disgorged to Congress. And I don't think there's any debate in this country that when you have four Americans killed, that's a problem. And we've got to get to the bottom of it, and there needs to be accountability. We've got to bring those who carried it out to justice. They won't get any debate from me on that. But when they go after the UN ambassador, apparently because they think she's an easy target, then they've got a problem with me. And should I choose, if I think that she would be the best person to serve America, in the capacity of the State Department, then I will nominate her. That's not a determination that I've made yet.
So why hasn't McCain gone after the president instead of Susan Rice? Why hasn't he gone after the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, who Susan Rice works for? You know why? It reminds me, the senile old man, McCain, it reminds me of a scene from the Kane Mutiny when he was asked, the captain of the ship. What happened? Just listen.
I know exactly what he'll tell you. Lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with a book, but they fought me at every turn.
Oh, yes. They're all lying. They're lying. Yes, yes, yes. I've done everything. I don't know what else I could do. They're lying. I mean, but, oh, do we remember when McCain and Graham were on, it was Meet the Press. Meet the Press. When McCain and Graham went on live television and said, this is in 2000 and I believe it's 2003, where they said, if we don't do something about the war in Iraq, he says, they have do something about going into Iraq, we will have a mushroom cloud coming down on us. They have weapons of mass destruction, and we need to go in there and stop them now, or it will be too late. Now they went on television every day almost, pitching a war. They went on every single show pitching how we need to get into Iraq by invading Iraq to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And I don't have that clip here. I don't believe I have that clip. But we needed to get into this this war with them. We needed to make sure that this is the only way we could prevent the United States from being in a nuclear war or with a war with weapons of mass destruction, because these Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. We know that. Yes, we do know that. He did have weapons of mass destruction, nerve gas and other agents, because we gave it to him. He had this. We gave him these weapons, but he had no more. He had no delivery system. So this was a ploy. So what about them lying? What about the National Security Advisor in 2003, Condoleezza Rice, coming on every show on Sunday for 3 or 4 weeks, stating that there would be a mushroom cloud unless we went and stopped Saddam Hussein? She was the National Security Advisor for George W. Bush 1 month before we invaded Iraq, and she then was okay to become the Secretary of State. What about that? That doesn't count? That doesn't. Let's play this thing one more time here. See what McCain said.
Four Americans died that didn't have to die. And for someone to go out and convey something that is absolutely false to all America, in my view, that we are, is responsibility. I don't know how you logically assume that she had nothing to do with Benghazi. The American people were told false information by her at the direction of the White House. No. By the way, I'm not taking anybody on. The American people have lost four brave Americans. We owe it to their families. We owe it to other Americans who served to find out what happened. For the President of the United States, for 2 weeks afterwards, to deny that that was the case is either a cover-up or it is incompetence, either one of the two. I think the President of the United States has a lot to answer for.
Now, this is the UN ambassador. She lives and works in New York City. She is not on the national security list for intelligence to get
intelligence information. See, the UN ambassador, she could no longer tell the president of the United States, no, I'm not going on no show. Just pay me my money. I'll just work in New York. Baloney. It don't work that way. The president of the United States tells you, I need you to do this. You need to do it. Now, you're just not going to drop and say, yeah, I'm just going to lie because you're lying. No. The CIA gave her these instructions. Why isn't this man going after Petraeus, who was the chief focal point, who scripted the script for her? Why isn't she going after the assistant CIA director, who is now the acting CIA director? Why isn't she going after the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton? Why isn't she going after the President of the United States? You know why? Because it didn't come from the President of the United States. It came from the CIA, and they directed the President, and they directed the Secretary of State, and they directed the UN ambassador. These are the talking points you need to say, because we have assets on the ground in Libya. That station was a CIA front house. All the other embassies closed up and a council left. Why didn't we? Because it was a CIA front house, which they are not saying. And they know they can't say it. So senile old man McCain is pushing one more time. Now, to bring this even further, let's see what Bill Richardson, who was UN ambassador, was a major player in the government. He appeared on the Reverend Al Sharpton show a couple of days ago. Hear what he says about it.
Well, obviously, the political season is on. It's unfortunate. I mean, the issue here is this. One, the President of the United States has a right to name their Secretary of State. This has traditionally always been given by the Senate to the President. There's never any debate. Secondly, is Susan Rice qualified? She certainly is. She's worked on African issues, a Rhodes Scholar. As UN ambassador, she's been the one that tightened the sanctions on Libya, on North Korea. She's articulate. She knows the issues. She's a very hard worker. That's the issue, Reverend. And if the president wants to nominate her as Secretary of State, we should just put the politics aside. She didn't know about this Benghazi issue.
Well,
so,
but that's where I want to get this. They're accusing her of giving bad information. But so has Senator McCain and Graham. Watch this, Governor.
I believe that Saddam Hussein presents a clear and present danger to the United States of America with his continued pursuit of to acquire weapons of mass destruction, and there's very little doubt that he would use them. We're going to find out massive evidence of weapons of mass destruction, and we're going to find the incredible brutalities that this dictator has inflicted upon the Iraqi people.
He has weapons of mass destruction. He is lying when he says he doesn't, and he will never voluntarily disarm.
Now, this is what Graham and McCain said in 2003 on Meet the Press and on Fox News. They lied. They did the same thing they're talking that Susan Rice did. They willfully lied. They did not know. And if you want to give them a break, say that the CIA told them this. But we know that's a lie because the CIA came out and said, we never said there was mass destruction. There was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We never said that. We don't know. They went on because they had, according to Darth Vader Cheney, they needed to invade Iraq because they needed this president to look stronger than his father. Finish the job. And because they wanted their hands in Iraq because of this elongated oil line they were going to drill in the future years. You haven't heard too much about that, but they got the biggest oil line going through all through Europe that's going through there. But that's another whole story we'll talk about sometime. But here is this man lying through his teeth. Now, why is he going to lie? Okay. The reason why he's going to lie is because John McCain is going to be less and less visible after January. No, he's not leaving the Senate yet. He's going to be less and less visible because he has term limited out of the Armed Services Committee. He can only do two consecutive terms. He is not eligible to be on that anymore. That's why he was pushing to get a special committee set up to investigate Libyan affair. But the Senate is controlled by the Democratic Party. And Senator Harry Reid said, no, hell no. So he is no longer going to be able to talk his bull where cameras will be in front of him anymore. Because no one cares what a minor, senile old man says, even if you are in the Senate, when you know that you have no power to do nothing but vote when it's time to vote. You have no power to influence anybody because your vote don't mean more than the brand new, the newest senator or the newest congressman in government. So this was a last-ditch effort by John McCain to be relevant. And he got his cohort, Lindsey Graham, to go along with him. And then they elicited Kelly Ayotte, who was new at this game, to go along with the sham. But they are looking more and more idiotic and stupid for following that bitter old man. Because he is a bitter old man. Now, let's just listen to what further went on with this interview between Reverend Al Sharpton and Bill Richardson.
Now, this led up to the Iraq War, both of them saying there were weapons of mass destruction that wasn't there. These are the people now that are trying to say that Susan Rice gave bad information when she gave information that she was given by intelligence.
You know, Reverend, I held the job Susan did, as you mentioned, and we would get, whenever we'd go on a news show or every day, an intelligence briefing or a piece of paper that gave you the guidance that you have on an event that happened overseas. Susan was following that guidance, and she did it very well. She did it on news shows. And to suggest that she was misleading the American people when, as you know, she's at the UN working in the Security Council in New York. And by the way, I remember, Governor, when I was UN ambassador, I gave you a reception at the UN mission. Do you remember that, Reverend?
Yeah, I remember you did give me a reception at the UN.
And the reason I raise that is this is a New York job, but it's in the cabinet. So you're not, you know, a security officer in
right.
Benghazi. You're UN ambassador before close to 200 countries. And Susan has done an admirable job.
Now, you also have Senator Susan Collins accused Susan Rice of taking a political role when she went on those Sunday shows you just referred to. But why did anyone accuse Condoleezza Rice of being political in 2004 when she appeared on ABC This Week 1 month before the 2004 election? And in that appearance, she called Bush a strong leader, and she was appearing as the National Security Advisor. all over the place, they're using different standards, which clearly goes back to your point of this is politics. This clearly can't be positions that they believe or practice.
That's right. And Reverend, a UN ambassador, a secretary of state, they don't get into domestic politics. But when there's an explanation that is needed on foreign policy to the American people, they do go on news shows. I used to go on news shows. Susan Rice has been in other news shows besides those five. The Secretary of State, that they're the chief foreign policy spokesman of the administration, to suggest not to go on news shows because that's political is just not part of precedent, and it's wrong. I think Senator Collins is, I know her. I think she's trying to do the best job she can, but to say not to go on those news shows, that doesn't jive.
Let me ask you one other thing, Governor, about Senator Collins. She wants Susan Rice to explain her role in the bombings in Africa, Tanzania and Kenya in 1998. You were the ambassador in 1998. Did Susan Rice have any oversight or any authority at all that dealt with those embassies in Kenya and in Tanzania that she would have to explain?
No, she is not a security officer. She is not a Homeland Security officer. At the time, she was Assistant Secretary of Africa on policy. She was making policy towards Sudan, towards Kenya, towards South Africa, an excellent policymaker, but she was not in charge of embassy security. That's diplomatic security. That are other entities that, unfortunately, we had that tragedy. But to suggest that Susan had a role in that is just not appropriate. It's not right. And policy-wise, she was making foreign policy for Africa. She wasn't in charge of the buildings in our embassy.
All right, I'm going to have to leave it there.
Okay, so what we just heard is from the horse's mouth. This man was the UN ambassador. And the problem is that he's telling us how it is. She does not have it. She's not in charge of the intelligence. This is all about a bitter old man who will not be interviewed anymore, who will become less relevant as the countdown towards the end of his position as the minority chair on the Armed Services Committee, wanting to get his last lick in into the House, into relevancy, into the newspapers, television, radio time, because we won't hear from this bitter old man anymore. We will not hear from him because he'll be an ordinary person in the Senate. He will not have, and no one will want to hear what he's got to say because he's not in charge of anything anymore. And it's another slap. Try to backhand the president, the committee organizer that beat him in 2008. That's all it is. It's a backhanded slap. Now, if they did not question the lying lies that Condoleezza Rice said in 2003 about us going up in a mushroom cloud, and she was a national security advisor and then became the Secretary of State, why are we, when we had over 3,000 lives lost in the Iraqi war, over 3,000 lives, more than 50,000 wounded. We're talking about four people. Yes, four people is four people too many. But it was a CIA conclave. All the, as I said before, all the other embassies, all the other places, consulate closed. They didn't close because they're a CIA front. And my colleague Thomas Fortenberry read to you last week, he didn't die in the embassy. He died of smoke inhalation in the hospital. They got him out of there. How come we don't hear about that? How come that senile old man and his cohort, Graham, and the Johnny-come-lately, Ayat, don't talk about that. How come they don't talk about running after Hillary Clinton? Because they're scared of Hillary Clinton. How come they don't talk about running after Petraeus? Because they're scared of Petraeus. They can say all they want. They don't want people to know. But it's going to get out. And it's fairly obvious what it's all about. I have the two calls here because we're going to get to something else that's very important about Carl Rove and Anonymous here in a minute. Hello there. Who's this?
This is George.
Hey, Mr. Gaffney from South Kakalaki. Did you hear any of the piece on the about Susan Rice I was talking about?
Yeah, I caught the end of it.
And what do you think? Bob McCain.
It's just, you know, I mean, look, my thing is this. I'm happy that McCain and them do all this stuff because the Republican Party is holding on to the same people that led them down the path of defeat. I don't want any of them to leave. They might be replaced by people who are competent and know what they're doing and, and don't have all this baggage that they're spewing. We need these people. Again, my point is there ought to be donations sent in by every Democrat to the Tea Party. They led the Republicans to the biggest defeat in their history almost. I guess maybe the biggest defeat in their history. Why do you want to change them? Why do you want to see them clean house?
Well,
they should stay in. We should write McCain letters telling them stay on the case because all the stuff they do blows up in their face. It blew up in the face of their election, and they still haven't understood that. I don't want them to leave. They might be replaced by competent people.
Are you saying this? Well, they had 10 people on stage back there a year ago. None of them were competent, except for John Huntsman. He got out because he said he didn't want to be part of the Ringling Brothers, Bonham and Bailey Circus.
But that's the kind of person we want to stay. Anybody that we want, listen, everybody they got in place is who you want. You want Karl Rove to again be doing their money, spending their money. You want Mitch Romney to run again. I'd be happy. These are the people Obama could get a third term. They could change the law and get a third term if they could keep these same people in the Republican Party in power. So if McCain wants to run around and do all this stuff, and it'll blow up in his face, like you said, but let him stay there. He might be replaced by somebody who's got some intelligence and common sense, and we don't want that because they could win the election with that.
Well, I was just about to ask that question to the Fresno Democratic chair who was just on the line. We just dropped him, so I don't know what happened. But here's the thing. I was saying before you got on the line, and you might not have heard this, as a Democrat, as a liberal Democrat, I do not want an incompetent Republican Party. Because when we have an incompetent Republican Party or any other party and you leave one party in charge, that is detrimental because they will be filled with delusions of grandeur. And you need to have a strong or semi-strong opposition party to keep your people in check. We need to have a strong opposition. You can't have night. Sun without night. You can't have rain without getting wet. We need to have a strong Republican Party, not a progressive party.
I agree with you. That's exactly the point. You're right. You're 100% right. But these are not the Republicans that we grew up with. These are a bunch of psychos. I agree with you. Everybody needs to be because if they were Republicans and they were really Republicans, as we knew Republicans, they would cross the aisle and work out. They never would work out a deal against the country. These cycles don't care about the country at all.
That's right.
I mean,
it's
if they would walk across the aisle, of course, it's a much better country. I wouldn't want to see 100% Democratic control or anything like that. But you need people who will walk across the aisle, like Obama said when he said he always. I mean, the first 6 months, a year of his administration, These people wouldn't let him do anything. If he wanted to sneeze, they wouldn't approve it.
They're
psychos. They're not. But I mean, I agree with you. A good Republican Party is a good balance for the Democrats and vice versa. But not these psychos. These people are crazy. How does Mitch McConnell say, "I hope the president fails"? I'm on an airplane. I hope the pilot fails.
Well, yeah, right. Because we might as well be on our air or on the Titanic. Now, I said this before you got on the air, and this was the major problem. Now, they're changing that up a little bit. Have you ever heard of the group called Anonymous?
That's they've taken that name. I see them all the time.
Well, there was Karl Rove, the person you just mentioned a little while ago, who I believe needs to be locked up for treason, has been accused of fixing the 2000 and 2004 election, was confronted by this group called Anonymous, who said that they found out how he fixed the 2004 election through a computer glitch that they arranged. And they sent him a letter. They sent him an email. They found out all his private cell phone numbers, all his computer email addresses and private email addresses, and hacked into every one of them. Now, I want you to hear this. It's a computer-generated voice, but this was played. I first heard it on the Tom Hartman show, and I went on YouTube and got the audio because I wanted to play it. But I just want you to listen to this.
Karl Rove, American Crossroads. We are Anonymous. We are watching you. We know that you will attempt to rig the election of Mitt Romney to your favor. We will watch as your merry band of conspirators try to achieve this overthrow of the United States government. We see that you have taken steps to ensure that this election race is a close race so you can step in and rig the numbers to elect your candidate, and then claim because it was a tight race that your candidate was able to narrowly squeak ahead and win. We want you to know that we are watching you, waiting for you to make the mistake of thinking you can rig this election to your favor. We want you to know that if we catch you, we will turn over all of this data to the appropriate officials in the hopes that you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. We are watching and monitoring all of your servers. We are watching traffic on each of them for anything suspicious. You will not get away with any fraud without consequences. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
Now, that was sent out to every one of Karl Rove's cell phones and computers that he was in charge of. Now, I heard this about 2 weeks ago, and then Tom Harmon played it on his show and showed how they did it. He said that it shows a pictorial of what they said that he did in 2004 was that they hacked into the Karl Rove Group, American Crossroads, hacked into the Ohio database into three major counties. And at 11:13 during the election at night, where Kerry was up, I believe it was like 53% to 47%. At 3:17, Kerry was down 53% to 47%. Now, they couldn't figure out Kerry's office, or anybody could figure out how there was such an abrupt change. And what they said was, oh, it was the delay in these three counties that came in. So they said that they understood how they did this, and they hacked into the servers in Ohio, Anonymous did, and they found out what they did was they said that American Crossroads servers would hack into the mainframe of the databases that was collecting all the votes. It would send the numbers to another computer in Tennessee, and that would be sent back to the server in Ohio with the different results. What they did was they got in between both servers in Tennessee and Ohio and prevented the numbers from going to Tennessee, sent different numbers to Tennessee, and Tennessee sent those numbers back to Ohio, and no one knew the wiser. So now there is an explanation here. Now I want you to hear, it's a little bit long, but Tom Hartman goes into this explanation. Now, well, you know, see why I said that this man needs to be brought up on treasonous charges. Now, just listen.
Here we go. Why Roe failed to deliver Ohio on Election Day, what happened in Ohio this time around. And, but what Bob Petraeus points out is that in the book Boss Roe, and thank you, and we have had the author of that book on this program. He's been on our, in fact, he was one of our Conversations with Great Minds. You can find that over at conversationswithgreatminds.com, half-hour discussions. In that book, he documents how in 2004, Karl Rove organized this system where the Ohio vote was counted in Ohio, and at 11:13 p.m. at night, the entire Ohio voting system crashed. All their computers crashed. A minute later, they came up. In that minute, all the votes had been rerouted through a server system in Tennessee. And so all the vote totals flowed back into the system in Ohio, and John Kerry lost, even though the exit polls showed him winning. And not only did he lose, but he lost specifically in there was a series of counties here. Delaware, Butler, and Warren counties. And suburban Cincinnati. These counties, Bob Petraeus writes, these three counties, Delaware, Butler, and Warren, provided more than Bush's entire Ohio victory margin of 119,000 votes in 2004. So what happened in Ohio this time? Interestingly enough, as Petraeus notes, curiously, the Ohio Secretary of State's vote tabulation website went down at 11:13 p.m. and was mentioned by Karl Rove on the news. This is 1 minute earlier than the time on election night 2004 when Ohio calls votes were outsourced to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then the vote flipped for Bush. Now, this is not some, wild claim. Vanity Fair contributing editor Craig Unger wrote the book Boss Rove. It's right there in the book. You can read it. This time, the Cuyahoga County vote tabulation site went down as well. So when these vote tabulation sites came back up a minute later, now, back in 2004 when they came back up, all of a sudden the numbers had flipped from John Kerry winning to George W. Bush winning. But this time, when they went down, Barack Obama was winning and Sherrod Brown was winning and others. And when they came back up, Barack Obama was winning and Sherrod Brown was winning. So what was different this time, last week, from 2004? Well, this is where it gets really interesting. I mean, really interesting. Wong Kett has posted a letter that is dated 6 November 2012, by Orca Killer and the Great Oz of Anonymous. And let me just share with you, in fact, one of the things that causes me to think that this definitely is anonymous is the kind of semi-anachronistic and flowery language that they use. You know, it's like they're talking, not just wearing the masks of Guy Fawkes, but of the era of Guy Fawkes. Greetings to the good people of the Velvet Revolution. Pleased we were to see that you put your faith in the hands of we protectors of democracy, and tempted too to claim your generous reward, but wealth does not drive us. 2 months prior to your offer, we chose to take action against those who had subverted the will of the people in past elections, which resulted in terrible destruction across the globe. I think it's reasonable to assume they're talking about the 2004 election and the way it was stolen in Ohio electronically by Karl Rove. We began following the digital traffic of one Karl Rove, a disrespecter of the rule of law, knowing that he claimed to be kingmaker while grifting vast wealth from barons who gladly handed him gold to anoint another king while looking the other way. After a rather short time, now keep in mind, Karl Rove put a lot of money into this voter database, this Get Out the Vote, GOTV, Get Out the Vote, program called Orca the Killer Whale. Okay, back to the letter from Anonymous. After a rather short time, we identified the digital structure of Karl's operation and even that of his orca. This was an easy task in that barn doors were left open and the wind swept us inside. So what did we do with these doors? Did we leave them open and catch the thieves as they steal the prize? Or do we close them so they cannot steal the prize? Our decision? Protect the citizens. We coded and created what we call the Great Oz, a targeted, password-protected firewall that we tested and refined over the past weeks. We placed this code on more than one of the digital tunnels and their destinations that Carl's not-so-smart worker bees planned to use on election night. We noticed that these tunnels were strategically placed to allow for tunnel rats to race to the server sewers from 3 different states. Yes, Karl tried to make it appear that there were more than 3, but we quickly saw the folly of his ploy. We watched as Carl's little boys and girls confidently ran their tests while Karl told his barons to smoke cigars. So apparently what Anonymous did, if this is to be considered true, and this, I mean, you know, here's the question. I mean, Bob Petraeus, there's a lot of people scratching their heads. He writes, was the fix in on Election Day in Ohio? The questions surrounding Election Day activities in Ohio and Karl Rove's now infamous meltdown on Fox TV election night are causing a buzz in the election integrity movement. Of course, we don't know for sure what happened. We know the circumstances were eerily similar to election tampering techniques the Free Press discovered after the 2004 election. One major similarity was Rove's insistence to his colleagues on Fox News that the media consortium's exit polls were wrong in Ohio. This is the same claim he made in 2004 concerning Ohio and in 2000 concerning Florida. And then he talks about how, curiously, the Ohio Secretary of State's vote tabulation website went down at 11:13 p.m., mentioned by Rove on the news, 1 minute earlier than the time on election night 2004, when the Ohio votes were sent to Chattanooga, Tennessee, to be counted, tabulated, and sent back to Ohio. That last part, my words. Actually, his words were, and then the vote flipped for Bush. And then he adds, this isn't just a Free Press claim, but is well documented by Vanity Fair contributing editor Craig Unger in his book, Boss Rove. So you go through this whole thing that Bob Petraeus wrote, and he's talking about how, you know, these experimental software patches that were supposed to be put on Ohio machines, they sued to stop that. They were unsuccessful, which kind of leaves, you know, Bob and the other people in the election integrity movement scratching their head going, what happened? How is it that Rove was able to steal Ohio in 2004 by moving the tabulations, the vote totals, out of the state at 11:13 or 11:14 p.m. over to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they got massaged, and then they got sent back to Ohio 60 seconds later? Just in time to announce that George W. Bush had won in 2004. How is it that that did not happen this year? Well, here we have Anonymous saying, ha-ha, we found the tunnel. We found the back door, and we put a firewall in it that's password protected, password supplied by Anonymous, not by Karl Rove. They kept the door open right up until election night. They watched Karl Rove's little rat scurrying back and forth in them, testing out the systems to steal the vote. And then they locked the fire door on election night, which makes so much sense when you consider how dumbfounded Karl Rove was that those numbers were wrong, especially...
Now, that was a little long, but to understand the content of this, what they did was intercept Karl Rove's interception of the votes so he could not massage them and send them back to the correct server in Ohio with a different outcome. Now, this is the reason why. If you looked at Fox News, which I had three TVs on watching all three stations at the time, that was the first time I was ever home during election night. And I could not believe what Karl Rove was saying and doing on Fox News. He looked like someone had just stolen $1 million out of his pocket. He could not believe it. He said, no, you're wrong. Even Fox News called it for Obama. They said, no, that's wrong. That can't be. You just wait. There's three more counties that are going to come in. And they're going to go for, he said, they're going to go for the for Romney. They said, no, there's not enough votes in those three counties. Oh, yes, there is. Yes, there is. There's enough votes. And it didn't happen. Why would he be so insistent on three counties that would not have made a difference because the way the vote was going in Ohio? Why would he have been so insistent, even telling the own computer people at Fox they were wrong? They sent down one of his the newscasters. She went down to the computer room where they were tabulating everything, and she told them, Karl Rove doesn't agree with you. He thinks that Romney's going to pull this out. They said, no, there's not enough votes for him to pull it out. He wouldn't even admit it 6 hours later. So there has to be more to than just Karl Rove being wrong. Close to $400 million he spent. Now, George, you and I know you can get somebody to cut your throat for 50 cents. Let alone $400 million.
Yeah, but this scares me too, because I want the Justice Department. I want the Justice Department to. I don't want some group called Anonymous to uncover all this stuff and thing. That's dangerous too. Just like you said about the balance.
Absolutely.
The Justice Department should be doing all this. I don't want to hear that there's a nice guy down the street who did something good to help out. I want the police to come and do something good.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not a vigilante society. I mean,
and the same people who turn anonymous that are helping you this year, they can look up and say, you know, we didn't get any reward for this, and these crooks that we caught are still making millions, and they may turn around and become rogues too. In other words, having, like you said earlier, having the power in their hands is not good either.
Absolutely.
Power should not be in the hands of a group called Anonymous, and it should not be in the. But Rove actually did. He flipped out on that. That does not ring true. The way he couldn't accept it, he could say he was shocked or something, but he just not accept it. And
no.
He told the people they were wrong. I saw the girl walk down the hallway.
Right. So I mean, why would he be in such a state of shock unless he figured the fix was already in? I mean, it's almost like the guy, you know, you fix the fight, and then the guy wins. Wait a minute, how'd you win? You're supposed to take a dive. You weren't supposed to win. I mean, you know. So the thing is now, I love the movie V for Vendetta. This is, and I'm looking at the stuff I downloaded here, and they used the guy false mask with two swords. Cross swords under it. This is Anonymous.
Oh, you use that, now, like they said, the guy pointed out, they use that flowery language.
That's right, you use that flowery language. Now, here's the problem. What you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, we now have to be protected by Anonymous? We're not protected by our own government? What did V do to the parliament at the end of the movie? He blew it up. I mean, what are we expecting out of this? Is this so hard that our government couldn't have done this? I mean, is it just like the TV series Person of Interest? Is there somebody watching everybody? Well, who's watching them? I mean, well, you know, are we supposed to just say, oh, yes, it's got to be a it's got to be somebody who's anonymous because they can't, they need to protect us from our own government. Well, we're in deep doo-doo if that's the problem.
And the other thing is that, listen, one time the bank robbery, the biggest bank robbery in Europe was in France over like a holiday, like they had a 3 or 4 day, I think they had like a 4 day weekend holiday. And this is when the guys tunneled into the bank. They came with like, it was like, it's like 20 something guys. They had two guys who were just cooks, two guys who were just the cleanup. They had all these people doing drilling and stuff like that. They had all these experts that broke into the bank in France over a 4 day period or something like that, emptied the place out. It was the biggest robbery. And when they interviewed the police says, well, we can tell who it was because this wasn't some crackheads on the corner. They said there's only a few people in the country who could have possibly done this. And, you know, they ended up catching the leaders and everything like that because, in other words, what I'm saying is if Anonymous has all this knowledge and all this equipment, like Person of Interest, if they have all this information and stuff like that, then it's not a bunch of kids over at junior high school 258 or something.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not some crackheads. It's not some guys at the drug rehab center. So there's only a few people who could possibly do this. If somebody does a lung and heart transplant simultaneously on you, it ain't a bunch of doctors that's sitting out here on the street corner. It's somebody that, you know, I mean, this Anonymous has got to be known too. They can't have all that expertise, and it didn't just happen overnight. So, and they're a political thing. So I'm just saying the Justice Department, you know, this is dangerous, and I'd rather see the Justice Department handle this. You know, even though they're political, everybody's political, but this is scary. I'm scared now with this Anonymous.
Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine? Even remembering the storyline V for Vendetta. I mean, the policeman that was investigating it, he was under the, you know, I got to get this guy because it's wrong for him to do it, even though he's right. But when everything blew up in the end, he said, well, I guess we just got to start from scratch. Well, you know, that's not real life. I mean, if the White House and the Congress would blow up, I mean, would we be better off? No, we'd be under martial law. I mean, so, you know, with this, if they did do this, and it sounds very logical. It sounds, I mean, you can look at Karl Rove's disposition and why he was so adamant that the results would be a certain way. I mean, makes you wonder.
Yeah, but, I mean, that was, I'm telling you, he was exact. I mean, it wasn't like he had a general idea.
No.
He was like specific. He was like, he was going to say, well, the vote should be 742,917.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. Bill Jones is walking down the street now, 918.
Right.
It was, his thing was too specific. In other words,
yeah,
I have a general
too.
Idea the Yankees are going to win the game or something like that.
Right.
If I say, well, Mattingly's going to get a hit in the third inning and so-and-so, there's something wrong with that pitcher.
Yeah.
I know that you can have a general idea. You can't have specific
in other words, if Alex Rodriguez is not playing, the Yankees have a better chance to win. I mean, so you can almost say that. You know, so the thing is that the but before I forget, and I want you to come on next week if you can, because I want to do a review of Lincoln, which I thought was super.
Everybody gave it four stars. It's The only thing I wrote is this. Everybody's going to have their qualms. In other words, it's the kind of picture, it's great, but you know, everybody's going to say, well, you know, Frederick Douglass wasn't in it and this and that. You're going to have
people, but
it's a great picture. What's there is great. Now, the only argument you can make about Lincoln is, well, you wish they would have done this, and you wish what Spike Lee said that I wrote my, in the Brooklyn thing, I wrote this, that there, you know, Spike Lee said, listen, when I make a picture, everybody says, well, I should have included this or I should have excluded that. He says, but I can't do that. I can only make my picture. I can't make your picture.
That's the only thing you can say about
Lincoln. But everything that's on there is wonderful.
Well, you know, the thing is that it was only supposed to deal with a certain segment, a very narrow window of time.
It wasn't supposed to deal with everything.
Yeah. That's right.
It was dealing with the legislation.
But the thing is that most people, I think, need to walk away with this is Thaddeus Stevens. That's what they need to walk away with this. And they need to go look up Thaddeus Stevens. And I'm telling you, I looked up, I got like 20 pages of Thaddeus Stevens in front of me right now. I mean, this man was unbelievable, had the Underground Railroad coming into under his office. I mean, people didn't even know that until after he died and they were tearing down the office. He had a stop for the Underground Railroad under his office in Pennsylvania. Now, I mean, it's just unbelievable. But the thing is that what I could get out of this was that under all the things that were going on, people dying in the war and all these other people getting upset, Lincoln remained calm, cool, and collected. And the only time we saw any really outburst was when he was talking about his son to his wife in the room when she was, when he was talking about she asked him to lock her up because she might have been, going off and maybe she was crazy. But the thing that I came out when I was talking to my wife about was that he, for all you people who hadn't seen Lincoln, you need to go out and see it, where he would speak and he was so far ahead of the thinking of 90% of the people around him that he had to almost tell stories like Jesus Christ did, parables, in order for them to understand what he was trying to make. He couldn't just talk to them and say, well, look, I need to do this, because this guy. No, they didn't understand that. So he had to say it in a story. And it got to the point sometime where they went, God, I don't want to hear about your stories. Well, but that was how most of the people could understand them, because they were not as bright as him. Am I going off on a tangent here? Or?
This is what Bill Clinton did all throughout the campaign. He would tell his stories and bring it around. Because I'm telling you, Bill Clinton, when he gave that speech that at the convention, and he did that all throughout that speech. And I forgot what that great punchline he had. That's what he was doing. If he had just sat there and said, well, the budget is $447 trillion minus $65,000 million. That wouldn't have meant anything to anybody. If he had sit there and said, well, the Legislative Act of 1972, that wouldn't have meant anything. But he told the stories, and every time he told a story, and he brought it around, and he said, oh, yeah, now I see. Bill Clinton, that speech that he gave was just dead on. And it's because that's what he did. He just kept, like you said, giving parables and things throughout the story, and throughout the speech.
Right.
And everybody just was on the edge of the seat. But you realize what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Every time he would hit that, and that's what Lincoln did, and you're right. You know, if he sat there and gave you all his facts and figures and the 3rd Battalion is moving up on so-and-so ridge, and that wouldn't mean anything. But he told these stories, and then you start to see biblical stories and everything, and just brought things around, and you realize, what he was aiming at.
Absolutely.
And nobody could disagree when he finished. No, when he got finished speaking, like you said, when he got finished, you couldn't disagree. It was clear in front of you.
Well, I want to say that so if I also thought that the photography, the cinematic photographer that, well, Spielberg used been using him for 20 years, the same guy, 30 years, and this movie would have worked in black and white because this movie was cerebral, as I'm going to talk about in the next two or three minutes, was cerebral. It wasn't meant, if you wanted to see people getting raped, cursed at, molested, blown up, virus attacking, the city buildings blown up, this ain't the movie for you. This is a movie, it wasn't a movie for you to go to sleep in. You want to go to sleep, stay at home. Don't go to sleep. Don't waste your $8 or $5 or $12, whatever you spend. This movie was for people who want to know something, who want to know something about their history. And for a historical standpoint, you're a history teacher. What do you think about it?
My first thing I said was, if you want to hear anything negative about Lincoln, then don't read what I'm writing. I said, I have nothing negative to say about it. I mean, that was my opening line. I have nothing negative to say about it.
Well,
there's nothing negative. And the only thing I said is, again, that you would have liked to have included something else. But that's everybody.
Right.
We got 310 million Americans. Everyone would look at anything. I mean, I could give you a birthday party. Oh, I wish you had orange juice instead of pineapple juice. Everybody can wish for something. That's all you could do. You couldn't find anything wrong with what was on front of you. What was presented was wonderful. But you could, you could have wanted more. I wrote that it was 2.5 hours, and if it had been 5 hours, I would have been happy. That's, I wrote that. If it had been five hours,
right.
I would have sat there happy.
Right. I read your
No vampires, no zombies, no buildings killing each other. I don't know why cars should fight each other, but I don't get it. Cars fighting cars, buildings fighting buildings. I don't know. But this picture was picture perfect. The only thing you can say is you would have liked something else thrown in. Everybody can say that,
that's
but
you.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with what they gave you.
And they had a lot of great lines in it. One of my favorite lines in the movie is, it's not illegal to bribe a congressman. They starve otherwise.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just stay up a minute. I'm going to read my special comment, and it's about Lincoln. If you're going to the movies this week or next, what are you going to see? So people just go to the movies, and after 5 minutes into in the upcoming trailers, they have already fallen asleep. Then again, some can't wait for New York City or London to be destroyed by some renegade military general or a new terrorist cell. And as always, we have the mutant virus that has been extinct a long time before humans walked the face of the earth. If you are any one of these people, let me first be the first one to tell you there are plenty of these action flicks out there showing in every Cinemax and multiplex theater in the country. However, if you're one of those moviegoers that only gets out during the holidays and birthdays and just doesn't want to sit in the dark for 2.5 hours, then I have a movie for you. As long as you're not expecting to see the beginning, the middle, and the end of the Civil War, why it started, and even how it ended, then I have a film for you, Lincoln. The film is based on the award-winning book by Doris Kearns Goodwin and looks at the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. But only through a very small window of time, the film deals with the historic and turbulent period in the office from November 1864 through his death April 15, 1865. And if you are an historical buff, political buff, or even if you just have the sense of wanting to know more about the hoops that needed to be jumped, the compromising, yes, the remunerations, payouts, and in some instances, bribes, which were given out to get the 13th Amendment passed, then do I have a movie for you. I want to thank you, Mr. George Gaffney from the Greenville News, for being on our show, and hope you could be here next week, because we didn't finish talking about Skyfall, which I still think is so fabulous. I read your review again. I wanted to get it in here, but we didn't have much time. But let's see if you could be on the show next week.
I'll see what's up.
We'll see what's up. Okay. I want to thank everybody for listening in. It's been a great show, and next month is going to be even better. And let's go.
Hold your breath in.